Remember love. Love is a source. Remember love. Love is a source. Remember love. This is NPR News. I'm Marianne Combs. For the rest of this hour, we're going to talk with some of the poets from this year's Be Heard Minnesota Youth Poetry Slam. Now, in its sixth year, the Poetry Slam series puts young poets to the test. Aspiring talent share their best works as they compete to represent Minnesota in the International Brave New Voices Youth Poetry Slam Festival coming up in July. The series is designed to give space for everyone, from Youth Slam veterans to first-timers, to present stories and counter-narratives as they call into being the world in which they want to live. Poets as young as 13 years old have been performing, and you can see the finals on March 31st at Stepping Stone Theater in St. Paul. Joining me now is one of the Be Heard Minnesota's organizers, Guante. Welcome.
Hello, yeah.
And we're also joined by two poets, Leo Remke-Rochard and China Hugh. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you.
Guante, tell us a little bit about the idea behind the Be Heard Minnesota Poetry Series, which is that you're using hip-hop culture, and particularly slam poetry, as a way to educate.
So normally when we talk about hip-hop, people immediately think about rap music. And like, if you go to the slam, there aren't a lot of people rapping, you know? But the idea is that we're thinking about hip-hop on a deeper level as like a cultural practice. For example, like one of the kind of elements of hip-hop as a cultural practice is the idea of the cipher, that when we like sit or stand in a circle together, you know, everyone can see each other. We can engage with each other. No one is like set up to be the expert. We're all on a level playing field. And with Be Heard, even though we don't literally stand in a circle to perform the poems and stuff, it's about that same idea on a deeper level, about the idea that everyone has a story, no matter where you come from or what your life is like. Everyone has a story, and every story is valid. And when we all get together to like share our stories together, that's where real growth can happen and where change happens.
Nice then that we're actually sitting in a circle right now. It feels pretty good. So first off, to you, China, tell me a little bit about, you know, what age are you? Where are you in school?
Well, I go to Central High School in St. Paul. I'm currently a junior in 11th grade. I actually started writing spoken word in 8th grade. My friend Leo here actually helped introduce me to the scene. He told me about a open mic that is hosted at Golden Time on Selby on Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. And so I decided to go join him, and that's when I started writing.
And then from there, you just sort of got looped into the series, because that True Art Speaks hosts that.
That's a small world. Yeah, the Reverb open mic every Thursday night at Golden Time, 6 o'clock.
Excellent. So there you go. So you have True Art Speaks, which also hosts this slam program. Excellent. And then Leo, how did you get hooked into this?
Yeah, so I was in 8th grade, and I heard this record by Ice Cube called America's Most Wanted. And I would just like loop it and loop it and loop it. And I was like, oh, I want to rap. And then I wrote a rap and I hated it. And so I started writing poetry. I gave my shot at it. And then my mom told me about this open mic that China was referencing. So I just started going there, meeting people.
So Golden Time is where it's at.
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
Guante, this has been going on for 6 years now.
Well, you know, True Art Speaks has been doing the Be Heard series. This is our sixth time doing it, which is kind of wild. But, I mean, there's also a tradition in Minnesota of youth poetry slam stuff. So people know, like, Shea Cage and E.G. Bailey, who ran the Minnesota Spoken Word Association, who ran the youth slam stuff for a few years before that. And it goes even back further, you know, the Juno Collective and Teens Rock the Mic. We talk a lot about, in True Art Speaks, how we're really building on work that's been ongoing for years now, I think. 14, 15 years.
Yeah, I love it that the spoken word scene in Minnesota is very conscientious of its elders.
Yeah.
That there is a long tradition here of spoken word artists. And, you know, you have people like Louis Alamayu, who's a spoken word artist. And then you have Bao Fee, who was a slam champion and now works at The Loft. And so there's this whole heritage of poets here in the Twin Cities that runs pretty deep. And you two are just the latest iteration in this long history. So tell us a little bit about what you have learned by being a part of this project and this program, Be Heard Minnesota?
What I love about this opportunity and being able to perform, you know, these poems, I love the process when writing. You know, I get to really access my creativity while, you know, being able to speak my mind about, you know, political issues and such.
You have a couple poems. I'd love to hear one of them. Why don't you choose one and sort of give us a little introduction?
Okay, sure. This poem I performed at the semifinals. I call it Sun. I kind of use the sun as an analogy to sons, like boys. and I feel like my audience when I'm performing my poem is just to society in general and just questioning how we're raising our sons.
Go for it.
All right. Thanks. Sun. She was taught to love the sun. Drawn in every picture when young, she was told it was the provider. Told to cater to it. Keep an empty space in your pocket for it. Make it a sandwich. Never question the sun. Let it alter the color of your body to its preference. Bare your skin when it wants to burn brighter. Hide in the shadows when it wants to spit its fire. Swallow cold things when it desires to evaporate all the water and accept the desert it leaves you in. One day, on an ice cream run, the sun tapped her on the shoulder, told her she was beautiful. Admiring her breasts and staring at her booty, it told her to dance for it back at his place up in space. He said, "Let me be your boyfriend. I'll never leave you, baby." Not flattered by his hot-headedness, feeling the radiated waves of insistence suffocating, trying not to make eye contact because she was told never to look directly at the sun, she said no. Still attempting to seduce her with tongues of fire from his ferocious photosphere, she did not chase the sun as he tried to use his cloudy-skied ideas of what girls like. She was not fearful in the presence of his broad, daylit shoulders. He said, "Nobody's watching," then felt his ultra-violent rays of hands wrap around her neck. "Take this vitamin D." She was not afraid. The sun was young compared to all the other stars. It expected her to surrender to the warmth of his hands like the ice cream held in her. She did not melt. She did not slide off the side of his tongue. He did not get to taste her. They told her the sun would protect her, to never go out at night. They say never to stare directly at the sun. Pfft, the lies. She looked the sun dead in his eyes. Young sun, everything doesn't simply orbit around you. Take your rays of ultraviolence off me. There will be no cancer upon this skin today. These cells will duplicate, and you will drown in the mass of this body. The young sun fled back to his horizon. Tears sizzling on the sidewalk as she walked away, realizing nobody ever taught that sun to only kiss skin with consent. Nobody taught him never to burn flesh whenever his ego pleased. Nobody taught him how to alleviate violent eruptions of plasma when confined in a solo atmosphere. She says, "Until we teach suns how to bounce their light off their moons of macho, until we start teaching sons to be gentle and not scorch lands in domination, until someone teaches these stars of sons to cater to their own cores with humility, she will always remember to lather on SPF. Remember that she produces fire, too. We were taught to love the sun. Now teach these sons how to love us, too."
Wow. China, thank you. Wow. That was China Hugh performing. She's one of 12 students that are competing to make it onto the team with Be Heard Minnesota that's going to be competing. They're sending a team to the Brave New Voices Youth Poetry Slam Festival in July. China, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love how the idea of the sun and the fact that, you know, the sun is something we love. We love summer. We love getting out there. But too much of it, you get cancer. Too much of it, it's wrong. And the same thing with, a man's affection. Like, mm-hmm. It's good when you want it, but too much of it in the wrong time, and it's deadly.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired this piece for you?
I was walking, it was a really hot, sunny day, and I decided to go get ice cream for myself. This was a couple years back, and I actually was tapped on the shoulder by this young man, and he tried to, you know, get to know me and be flirtatious, but I had a poor encounter with him. I was sexually harassed by him, so that's what inspired me to write this poem.
Mm-hmm. And here we are in this midst of this moment where there's all these Me Too stories and coming out. It feels very timely, very of the moment.
Yeah, it took me a while to actually tell my mom about the event. I recently just told her about it, being comfortable writing about it. So,
So it sounds like the slam poem, I mean, doing this is a powerful tool for...
telling your story, yes, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about the importance, I think, in slam poetry scenes and in spoken word of, like, style and substance. The idea that, like I agree with that poem and, like, on a political level, but there's something about, like, the central metaphor and the imagery and the storytelling of it that makes it something more than just, like, I get it or I understand it on an intellectual level. It hits me, you know? And I think that attention to craft is why I keep being drawn back to Poetry Slam, is that it's people telling their stories and saying things that they need to say, but also trying to find the most, like, creative, engaging way to say it. I think that was a great example.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the students who have been a part of this process and who have been competing, what are some of the other issues that are being brought up, that are being dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, every year, because it's an issue every year, people talk about police violence, people talk about institutional racism, and not just racism, but institutional, you know, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, et cetera. Because the spoken word stage is one of the only, like, big public places we have in some sense to, like, talk about some of these issues. Stuff about identity comes up a lot. Stuff about, you know, institutional oppression comes up a lot. I think if there is one thing this year, just because student voice and student power has been actually in the news so much because of the Parkland shooting and because of student activism around gun violence, we've heard a little more than usual about that.
Leo, you want to pick a poem and present it to us, give us a little introduction?
Yeah, sure. So this is a poem called For Freddo, and Freddo Santana was actually a rapper, a part of the drill music scene in Chicago. He was this rapper that recently died ODing off of lean, and the poem kind of explores how we're, like, listening to people's pain. You know, if we're just kind of exploiting it, and I think kind of what's most disturbing about the drill music scene is how we are, you know, just kind of our failure to process it and listening to these people that are, you know, obviously telling something very urgent and very close to what their lives actually are.
So for those of us who aren't familiar with drill music, can you give me a sort of a brief, quick idea?
So drill music is very kind of just raw, dark, ambient music that draws on influence from Chopped and Screwed, which is a type of kind of slowed down, drowsy, drug-induced hip-hop from the South, and footwork, which is like a very agile dance music from Chicago. And it's kind of, you know, very woven, and this music has been utilized to kind of send threats and notify people in your neighborhood of these gang territories. And so it's this music that's all based around, you know, real-life violence that's about to happen on the local level. And it's been transformed into kind of this anthem for people to just kind of enjoy as entertainment. I think this poem was essential for me to write this year because I have a poem about the school shootings as well, and analyzing kind of my own exploitation of the pain that's going on in Chicago and my exploitation of this music. And so it's really just like a call to be more conscious with how we're processing music, with how we're processing art, and how, you know, that's something that True Art Speaks has really taught me, that, you know, it's more complex than someone just having the right answer. And I think, you know, through the slam, it allows people to be affirmed with just not having the right answer. And so True Art Speaks is really, and the Be Heard Slam and the people I've met has really allowed me to see that, like, I can just take in a story. And although this drill music, you know, it's very heartbreaking what's happening in the shootings and I'm not living anything close to it, I can hear it as a story of something that needs to be done over there. And that, you know, art is more of a way of kind of just reminding people what's going on in the world. And so
it's helping you to build empathy as opposed to say, this person's right, this person's wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so this is kind of my eulogy for Freddo Santana.
Well, let's hear it. Yeah. This is Leo Remke Rochard performing for Freddo.
Last Friday, the 27-year-old body of Freddo Santana revealed that the bribe it had been proposed, the exchange of life for a chance at health, the safeguarding of one's own waste for peace was wrong, was an ill that I can but feel I have lended myself to too many times. I've lived off of him amongst others, sometimes even let my teeth glide and nails gnaw through him, or my eyes scan his home in a way unwanted. It was wrong, starting with what I had seen of it, the response to a decade of fans asking where real hip-hop went, and so groveling out of the shadows induced by tall buildings, wearing ankle bracelets to find out that they'd rather die at their origins anyway, wielding weapons to find out that rights exist, but not for them, dragging expensive or absent clothes through the vomit they have been forced to live in, a series of customs America thought to have had all exported away by now, and might still think so. But exist to war with assumptions like that, a beacon of black light in the Midwest, warning the world of new confessions to medicate with. At what point are we sane enough to be disgusted? Is it when 1,000 are dead in Chicago? Is it when 10,000? Is it when 100,000? Is it when 1,000,000? Is it when our entire earth is observed as though a big drill scene? Is it before or after the natural world reaches its end? Is this already an indication of the hereafter, where listening is archaic, and so is the life of a 27-year-old man from Chicago, having lived as close to survival as his music was to life, of a tradition where words still have specific meaning, where art is still taking a direction towards reality. Last Friday, Fredo Santana died of a fatal seizure, and some still have the audacity to talk about what him and people alike should and shouldn't have done, about how politicians that don't even know they exist are going to swoop in and save them, as if these people were disconnected enough from themselves to think that an image of progress that sells is one including a Jehina like the one they live in. And between us, Chicago, I don't know what you need, but if you do keep drilling, if you do keep the tune, I know that from now on I need to listen to you harder than I ever have.
Thanks, Leo. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Marianne Combs, and we're talking with some poets, young poets who are part of the Be Heard Minnesota Youth Poetry Slam. They'll be picking the finalists to go on to the Nationals on March 31st at Stepping Stone Theater in St. Paul. Guante, you're one of the organizers of this event. What do you hope that these students come away with from this process?
Yeah, I mean, right away, I mean, what Leo just said about, you know, spoken word, but also poetry, but also art in general, being a space where you don't have to have all the answers, where you can grapple, I think, authentically and honestly with really complex, nuanced issues, like as that poem showed, is so valuable. You know, it's valuable for us to be able to process things and, you know, for our own kind of mental health and physical health. But it's also valuable on a community building level to be able to just, again, be in a space with a bunch of other people and telling our stories and like sharing these ideas and, again, grappling. I think that word is really important for this. But I also hope, you know, in a more general sense that this, you know, I know because I've worked with young people for such a long time that, you know, that y'all get something really, really cool out of this in terms of like building community with each other and being validated for your opinions and all that stuff. But I'm really interested in what adults get out of it too. Particularly, I mean, you know, the poem that you just shared about exploitation, about hearing other people's pain, like that's such a thing that I think adults have to grapple with. But then also on another level, just realizing that like young people know what they're talking about. Like young people are the experts on their own experiences. And like if we want to create policy, for instance, like educational policy, that is good, we need to listen to the people who are most directly affected by it. And I think that's a big part of what True Art Speaks' work is all about.
You're developing these really strong voices, but you're also creating a space where the public can come and listen in on what is on the mind, what's on the minds of these students, which is really powerful. And as somebody who's been to these, I have to say, you know, we say competition, but the energy in the room is so positive and supportive. It's really about cheering each other on and getting the energy up so that you perform your best work.
I love it. I think all the competitors, they've been so welcoming. And whenever, whenever we go on to perform, we're always cheering each other on, giving each other hugs and just very supportive. I love it. Yeah.
Leo?
What I think is like coolest about it is that you're kind of anonymous when you go to these things as like a young person. Like when I first started going to the open mic or the slam, there's this entire kind of baggage that's attached to you of like the, you know, social group that you fit into, or, you know, who your parents are, who you go to school with. And kind of when you enter the slam, like none of that is kind of there. Like you are just there with how you look and what your ideas about the world are. And that's kind of what I enjoy most about it. And just kind of collecting like a, almost like an archive of just kind of hundreds or, you know, perhaps thousands one day of like stories that I've heard. And it's really shaped kind of how I interact with people and how I have, you know, patience with certain people, and even just talking over people. Like when I know that some people are out there experiencing these conditions and have almost like attached stories to people that I see in my life every day, it's helped me do that. Yeah.
We have time for one more poem, China. I'm wondering if you could introduce one more for us.
Okay, yeah. This poem is called Spiders. It's another poem I wrote sort of based off of sexual harassment that I wrote in eighth grade. It was probably one of the first poems I felt comfortable performing. Spiders. You know what I don't like? Spiders. I hate the paranoia of walking into a new old school knowing that there's a spider that possesses your squeal. A spider somewhere in the upper right-hand corner of a locker, or maybe one rushing out of a vintage cupboard's crevice as you open it just for you to slam its door back. I was never one to kill spiders, but I was never one to let them live either. See, to me, spiders aren't just unpleasant to look at. They are invading. They crawl into my spaces without asking. Spiders don't have any antenna, so they don't bother sensing if the other feels threatened. I've had spiders try to snatch my torso with their chelicera, try to offer me silk so they could spin me into a cocoon and feel the satisfaction of sucking my beautiful blood. I've had spiders creep out of the cracks of our classrooms, use its claws and carnivorous mouth to tear a piece of mine. I felt all eight of its legs skitter up my thigh and try to greet the divine yoni. I've had spiders maraud my body, wait to catch me in their web and violate my body. I'm sorry if my claims aren't cataclysmic enough for you to feel any compassion, because right after you told me that an itsy bitsy spider almost forced itself into one of your valued spouts, you've doubted that I've ever experienced anything as severe. Because I know when I said I've had to play the part of rain and wash spiders out of my spout, you tripped over my tongue as if the words were mistakes made in a sidewalk, as if the cement holding me together didn't naturally crack, as if no spider would take the opportunity to use them as a hiding place, whether you meant it or not. The message received was the dismissal of my feelings by the absence of your presence. Even though you were in the same room as I was being paralyzed by venomous vulgarity, the absence of your fist to fight for me when I was too busy trying to calculate with my fingers how many people have been crying from too many spider bites to create 10,000 lakes, must I have a title that society has labeled priority for you to notice, for you to even hear me when I say there are spiders crawling all over my body.
Wow. China, thank you. That piece, the rhythm in that piece, it almost felt like a song was about, you know, was taking shape. It had this very lyric sort of, and the rhythm was very compelling and moved me forward a lot. I'm wondering, Guante, can you tell us a little bit about what are the elements of a really strong spoken word slam poem?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's had to be a judge at times during the series, which is always really, really difficult, you know, what we ask the judges to look for, and what I look for myself, are it's the wholeness of a poem. So it's content, it's substance, but also it's craft and it's writing, also it's performance delivery, also it's originality, also, you know, it's connection to like what's going on in the world, or, you know. But in like a particular poem might have a higher score in one of those categories and lower in another category, or whatever. But I think that's what spoken word, and particularly slam poetry, actually has been really useful at, is challenging us to see the wholeness of a piece, if that makes sense. And I think, you know, one really great example of that, that I think, you know, actually both of the poems that China performed now do really well, is there's something different than just like standing up on a stage and like being right about something, you know, which is valuable, but there's something about when we use metaphor and imagery and storytelling to make our points, that like something else, something deeper happens, I think, in the audience. And that's one thing that, you know, as a judge, that I'm always looking for, is how are we saying the thing in a way that it hasn't been said yet, as much as that's possible.
So what do you hope these young poets walk away with at the end of this experience?
Can I throw that to y'all? Like, I'm curious. Like, what do y'all hope to walk away with?
I'm excited to... I mean, I've met so many new people already. I kind of took a break from being in the scene for a couple of years, but just getting back into it, it's just the people I meet and the questions I get to ask. That's something I've been learning, growing up, is it's important to ask a lot of questions, 'cause you don't always have to know the answer, like Leo was saying mm-hmm. earlier. I'm just very excited to learn more and develop, as a writer.
Leo?
Most of it for me is just kind of, receiving knowledge on how to actually change the language and include people. You know, I mean, I think the first time I ever heard about, trans people being out was through this slam competition. And it's like, now I always, refer to people as they. And even though that may seem like a subtle thing to a lot of people, I'm just like having these cues and having these stories to kind of, modulate your language so that it is more inclusive of people and more open to discussion, allows for stronger relationships and more perspectives. So, yeah.
As I want to start out, how neither of y'all said, like, I'm going to win. I'm going to win the slam. And I appreciate that.
Well, Guante, Leo, China, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Leo and China, best of luck on March 31st in the final round at Stepping Stone Theater.
Thank you.
DJ face down in the river.